Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 14th. Front page. Pioneer pledges $1 million to West Texas Food Bank. Promise helps WTFB mark Hunger Action Months by Stuart Doreen. Pioneer Natural Resources is pledging $1 million to the West Texas Food Bank to help fund a school pantry throughout the Permian Basin. The five-year commitment from Pioneer is helping the nonprofit mark Hunger Action Month in September. The gift will benefit dozens of K-12 schools across seven counties in the region. One of the cornerstones of Pioneer Natural Resources is its longtime commitment to giving back to the communities where its employees work and live. And our pledge to the West Texas Food Bank fulfills that critical mission of serving others, Pioneer President and Chief Operating Officer Rich Dealey said. As we mark Hunger Action Month in September and many students return to the classroom, it's heartening to know that this gift from our Pioneer family will help the food bank keep school pantries throughout the Permian Basin stocked so that no child has to go hungry. As parents send their kids back to school after the summer break, many families depend on the food served at their child's school to supply a nutritious meal. And for children from lower-income homes, it might represent the most food they'll eat all day. Numerous studies have shown that children suffering from chronic hunger experience numerous obstacles in the classroom, including the inability to focus on schoolwork, excessive absences due to illnesses, and learning disabilities, among other impairments. As we mark Hunger Action Month in September and many students return to the classroom, it's heartening to know that this gift from our Pioneer family will help keep the food bank, keep school pantries throughout the Permian Basin stocked. Pioneer brought us 12,952 cans when we first opened our pantry, said Barbara Yarborough, South Elementary parent liaison and longtime member of the Midland ISD family. Pioneer and the West Texas Food Bank have been absolutely amazing to us. I have former students who now work at Pioneer, and it's overwhelming to think that these former students want to help me. They begin to call me to figure out how they can help us. They have come and volunteered. They helped paint the pantry, and they helped me unload the delivery truck. I'm so appreciative of everyone who has taken part in bringing this food pantry to life. What this pantry has done for our students has left me speechless. Roughly 1 in 6 kids experience hunger in America, and nearly 60% of children from lower-income families say they come to school hungry, according to statistics from No Kid Hungry, a national campaign dedicated to ending childhood hunger in America. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that more than 38 million people in the U.S., including 12 million children, are food insecure, defined as a lack of consistent access to enough food for every person in a household to live an active, healthy life. Millions of Americans were also affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, which saw unemployment rates skyrocket and more families turning to local food banks to help make ends meet. This is the month to spread the word and take action on the hunger crisis and dedicate ourselves to the solution. And Pioneer Natural Resources is committed to joining the fight to help end hunger in West Texas, said Libby Campbell, executive director of the West Texas Food Bank, which has forged a longtime community partnership with the company. We realize that hungry children cannot learn, and Pioneer's $1 million commitment will help fund school pantries across the Permian Basin. The donation to the West Texas Food Bank is another in the commitment that Pioneer has made in Midland and around the Permian Basin. Last November, Pioneer donated more than 35 acres of land to Midland Habitat for Humanity, valued at nearly $2 million. The gift marked the largest land donation Midland Habitat had ever received. Around that time, Pioneer announced the pledge of $2.5 million toward a partnership aimed at redeveloping 120 acres of Hogan Park. Pioneer has also donated 3 acres in Northwest Midland near the Bush Tennis Center for the Bush Ace Athletic Center. In May, Pioneer announced the donation of 25 playhouses of the playhouses to dozens of nonprofits, schools, libraries, and museums. Some destinations include the West Texas Food Bank, Midland Public Library, the Bynum School, and the Museum of the Southwest, among others. Pioneer's $1 million pledge to the West Texas Food Bank aligns with our strategy of giving back to the Permian community in which we live and work, said Daniel Pender, Pioneer's Surface and Land Business Development Coordinator. This donation continues to show how Pioneer is dedicated to Permian education and addressing other vital needs within our community. City leaders finalize tax rate and budget. New budget is $12 million more than fiscal year 22 tax rate to mean increase to the average home, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council voted Tuesday to approve the 2022-23 budget and tax rate. The City of Midland budget includes $148.6 million in general fund operating expenses, those funded by property and sales taxes, among other revenue streams, according to information from the city. That total is $12 million more than what was budgeted for fiscal year 2022 and the most since fiscal year 2020, when general fund expenditures reached $154.82 million, according to the city's fiscal 2021-22 budget. Previous budget workshops showed. Personnel makes up 63% of City of Midland general fund expenditures. Contractual services amount for 25%. Fire and police departments both make up 26% of the budget. The other departments accounting for 10% or more are engineering, 14%, and community services, 10%. Budget priorities, according to the city, included maintaining and rebuilding service to the public, downtown development, critical water resources and infrastructure plan, quality of place improvements, improved transportation avenues, improving city facilities, and strategic final planning. City property taxes. The property tax rate voted on was 0.355039. The city reported this is effectively a 1.4% increase in revenue, all of which is due to new property. The approved tax rate will mean a tax increase to many people in Midland, according to information the city provided. In 2021, according to the city, the average home value inside city limits was $295,000. Combined with a tax of 36.7189 cents per $100 valuation, that resulted in city taxes of $1,083.21. For the upcoming fiscal year, the average home value inside the city, according to the Perryman Group, is said to be $325,000. Combined with an approved tax of 35.5039 cents per $100 valuation, that would result in city taxes of $1,153.76. Other budget notes. To help pay for the increased spending, city officials went to the general fund balance or reserves. City officials allocated $12 million in ARPA funds, $21.6 million for infrastructure growth, and $1.2 million for operating expenses. The fund balance, which stood at $118.8 million at the end of the last fiscal year, will have an estimated $84 million at the end of this fiscal year, according to the city. The city also reported operating expenditures of $230.4 million in other city funds, those not supported by general fund revenues. Total operating expenses for all funds is $379 million. County's purchasing power is second highest in Texas, by Ben Schaefer. The purchasing power of the average Midland County resident is the second highest in the state, according to a study from SmartAsset.com. The financial advice website showed Midland County ranked second at 68.05% to the Panhandle County of Sherman, 70.34%. Rounding out the top five were Shackelford, Lipscomb, and Culberson. Per capita income was the reason for Midland County's place among the state's elite. Smart Asset showed per capita income inside Midland County at $126,631, the highest in the state and the 10th highest in the nation. Smart Asset showed that Midland County's per capita income was nearly $35,000 more than second-place Sherman, $91,855. Glasscock County ranked third in the state, $87,334. The state average for per capita income is $55,129. Midland County didn't rank as well for cost of living. Smart Asset ranked Midland 253rd across the state, or second to last, with an average cost of living at $54,426. The average in Texas was $35,326. Other West Texas county rankings for purchasing power included Glasscock, 12th, Martin, 19th, Potter, 58th, Tom Green, 72nd, Taylor, 82nd, Randall, 114th, Ector, 116th, Lubbock, 124th, and Andrews, 164th. Small Bites. Champs Sports Bar keeps Basin pride strong and true. By Morgan Taylor Thomas. Nothing says West Texas love quite like a Texas Tech and Dallas Cowboys themed sports bar, equipped with more than 10 TVs and a big screen hanging above walls full of shadow-boxed jerseys and memorabilia. Parked in the shopping center at the corner of Garfield Street and Loop 250 in North Midland, Champs Sports Bar officially has opened its doors, packed with enthusiasm and hope. Manager Christina Alonso told the Reporter Telegram that the establishment originally opened in Lubbock in November 2019. However, the pandemic forced a closure in May 2020. Now, the mom and pop aims to bring the same energetic energy and family-friendly space to Midland for round two. Hot Bites. On brand with their Texas sport team theme, Champs embraces all parts of the game by renaming their foods. For example, appetizers are known as first downs, salads as putting greens, large plates as home run platters, sides as bench warmers, and the kids' menu as little raiders. Some menu options include a mound of onion rings and ranch, known as Olympic rings, a fried chicken sandwich drenched in homemade honey butter, a 12-ounce Rock Hound ribeye, mac and cheese, fried okra, and corn dogs for the kids. Yet Alonso said patrons can't come to Champs without trying two items. The first, Cheesehead cheese sticks. Although they may sound like a typical mozzarella stick, Alonso said their slight spicy kick set them above the rest, and the creamy ranch dipping sauce is the icing on top. The latter, one of Champs' in-house made burgers. Made by hand every day with fresh ingredients, these patties lay thick on Texas toast can be found under Big Old Cheeseburger or Patty Mahomes Melt. Cold Sips. With a full bar, the Red and Black establishment carries any and everything one may desire. Happy Hour, which runs from 3 to 6 p.m., includes $1 off draft beers. Looking for some local flair? Grab a glass of Tall City Brewing Company's Midland Lager. Alonso also said the crew hopes to have the frozen machines up and running this week, which will add frozen margaritas, pina coladas, and daiquiris to the list. Overall vibes. A few aspects set Champs apart from chain grills, such as Buffalo Wild Wings or Pluckers. First, it's a family-run business. Strong community ties make Midland unique, yet sometimes Midlanders only flock to big names. Supporting locally owned restaurants keeps the city fresh, innovative, and populated with wholesome people and hard workers. Next, the staff. Alonzo, a Midland native herself, runs a down-to-earth team of friendly and helpful staff, presenting with grace even during an opening night. Lastly, the slightly smaller setup allows guests to experience a more intimate dining experience, as aspect usually absent at sports bars. Even through the rivalry, Red Raiders, Longhorns, Miners, and Aggies alike can find a sense of comfort and familiarity in the four-walled building. Here's a sidebar that accompanies the previous story. At a glance, what Champs Sports Bar? When? Monday through Sundays, 11 a.m. to 2 a.m., 18 and over after 10 p.m., subject to change. Where? 4610 North Garfield Street, Midland. Happy hour, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Details. Champs hosts many college and NFL game days. A listing with dates and times can be found on the restaurant's tables. Jobs. The restaurant is still looking to fill team slots. Job applications can be found at champsbarmidland.com. Obituaries published in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, September 14th. Charles Eldon Collins. Charles Eldon Collins was called home September 11th, 2022, at the age of 83. Charles was born November 19th, 1938, in Coleman, Texas, and moved to Midland in 1956. After graduation, Charles married his wife, Shirley Ann Matney, March 20th, 1959. Charles is survived by his wife of 63 years, Shirley. Three children, David, Collins, and wife Sherry of Midland. Sherry Roper of Fredericksburg. Kay Cobb and husband Danny of Royce City, Texas. Five grandchildren and one great-great-grandchild. He is preceded in death by his parents, Herman, Dewey, and Mabel Lou Collins. Son, Charles Collins, Jr. Brother, Dwayne D. Collins. And sister, Patsy L. Duprang. Visitation will be held Wednesday, September 14th at Llewellyn Garcia and Pipkin from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Graveside services will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Cemetery, September 15th at 11 a.m. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Garrett Wade Casey. Garrett Wade Casey, 22, of Odessa, passed away September 2nd, 2022, in a local hospital. Funeral service will be held at 4:30 p.m. Friday, September 16th, at Nally Pickleham Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Services will be directly followed by a celebration of life at the Ranchland Hills Golf Club, 1600 East Wadley Avenue, Midland, 79705. Garrett was born in Killeen, August 15, 2000, to Paul and Michael Casey. In 2018, Garrett met and began dating Leslie Shirley. 2 years later, they had a beautiful baby girl, Harper. In addition to Paul, Michael Harper, and Leslie, Garrett is survived by four siblings and their spouses. Sister Taylor Wood and spouse Caleb. Brother Kevin Casey and spouse Lex. Brother Tanner Casey and spouse Kayla. And sister Mackenzie Casey. Garrett is also survived by many grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, and an abundance of friends. All expressions of sympathy, donations, and cards are welcome. The family requests that those who wish to make donations consider doing so to Venmo at Michel-Casey or PayPal CASPRELL at AOL.com to support Garrett's pride and joy, Harper Renee, in her upbringing. Arrangements are made under the direction of Nally Pickleham Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Jennifer Michelle Bateman McDaniel, December 27, 1981 to July 15, 2022. Our precious beloved daughter, wife, mother, sister, niece, cousin, aunt, godmother, and friend, Jennifer Michelle Bateman McDaniel is in the presence of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ with the host of loved ones who rejoiced on her arrival on July 15, 2022 to be reunited and welcomed to her heavenly home. God blessed this world with her precious self on December 27, 1981 to enrich each and every life that he divinely weaved into hers. Funeral services were held July 27th at St. Anne's Church, and a celebration of life was held Saturday, July 30th, for Jennifer Michelle Bateman McDaniel. Jennifer leaves her legacy with three daughters and all her countless family, friends, and co-workers whom she loved with an everlasting love. Mary A. Showalter. Mary Minnie Showalter, age 92, passed away August 27, 2022, at the Vogel Alzheimer's Center at Maynard Park Retirement Center, located at Midland, Texas. She was born October 6, 1929, in Crested Butte, Colorado. She was the daughter of Cyrus and Mary Bishard. She married Ernest Ernie D. Showalter March 21, 1950. In October 2015, she moved with her husband into the Maynard Park Retirement Center. Due to her health, she moved into the Vogel unit in Maynard Park in February 2016. On March of 2022, she and her husband celebrated their 72nd wedding anniversary. Minnie is survived by her husband, Ernie Showalter, her son, Hans Showalter of Richland, Washington, her daughter, Teresa Newman, and husband, Frank, and grandson, Taylor Newman of Midland, her sister-in-law, Norman Jean Brenneman, and her two sons, Robert and Jerry, and daughter, Ruth Ann Graber, her brother, Arnold Bishard, and wife, Gwen, and nephew, Clifford Bishard. She was preceded in death by her parents, Cyrus Bishard and Mary Bishard, brother Levi Bishard, his wife, and son. Her family would like to express gratitude to the service provided by Vogel at Maynard Park, the Manor Park chaplain, Bill Billett, and Home Hospice for their love, care, and prayers during her difficult time. Memorials may be made to the Vogel Center at Manor Park, 410 Helen Greathouse, Midland, 79707, and Home Hospice of Midland. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, September 16th at Park's Faudry Family Chapel at Manor Park in Midland. Arrangements under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Mary Nell Crosby Israel. Mary Nell Crosby Israel, age 84, went to her heavenly home on Saturday, September 10th, after battling pancreatic cancer with great endurance, courage, selflessness, and faith for 2.5 years. Mary was born December 8, 1934, in Longview, Texas, to Lloyd and Bonnie Dugan Crosby. Mary and Curtis were married June 9, 1963, and were married for 53 years, until his passing in 2017. Mary is survived by daughter Amy Israel Penland, son-in-law Haynes Penland, and favorite granddaughter Hannah, and daughter Bonnie Israel, all of Midland, brother John and wife Marlene Crosby of Radnor, Pennsylvania, sister-in-law Yvonne Crosby of Littlefield, Texas, brother-in-law Chester and wife Sherry Israel of Levelland, Texas, stepsister Pat Gottlob of Lubbock, and stepbrother Benny Williams of Dallas. Mary is preceded in death by her parents Lloyd and Bonnie Crosby, stepmother Willie Gertrude Williams Crosby, brother James Dugan Crosby, and nephew Tommy Jean Crosby. Services will be held at Fairmont Park Church of Christ Thursday, September 15th at 2 p.m. with visitation and dessert to follow in the fellowship hall. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the educational and mentoring work of Opportunity Tribe at 3310 West Wadley Drive, Midland, 79707. Online, opportunitytribe.org. Arrangements under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 14th. Commissioners lift burn ban and approve tax rate. Ector County Commissioners on Tuesday voted to lift a burn ban that has been in place since June and approved the budget and tax rate for fiscal year 2022-23. The burn ban was voted into place on March 22nd and extended on June 28th. At the beginning of August, the precipitation was 2.23 inches for the year. That changed over the last month as CBS 7 has reported more than 4 inches of precipitation during that time, while average temperatures have dropped by 7 degrees Fahrenheit. According to a map provided by the Texas A&M Forest Service as of September 9th, all of the surrounding counties to Ector have burn bans. The closest counties that don't have burn bans are Loving, Reeves, and Pecos. Texas A&M Forest Service also lowered the wildland fire preparedness level to level 1 on September 6th. Texas A&M Forest Service details on its website, preparedness levels are dictated by fuel and weather conditions, fire activity and fire suppression, resource availability. Level 5 is the highest level of wildland fire activity and indicates heavy resource commitment to fires locally. Commissioners also approved the budget for fiscal year 2022-23. County Auditor Randy Donner said the approved budget has the general fund at $67,889,795 and the sales tax fund at $38,749,251. Donner said Monday that this is about a $2 million increase from what was estimated before budget hearings began on August 1st. Donner said there isn't one major cause of the increase, but a bunch of items added up. The court also approved adopting the 2022-2023 tax rate for Ector County. It will be $0.35000 per $100 valuation, down from $0.36500 over $100 valuation for last year. The county held its required hearings for the rate change last week, as the rate will still bring in more revenue than the previous year due to rising valuations. Odessan Needs Help with Historic Photo by Michael Bauer. It was last month when retired Odessa firefighter John Taylor stumbled across an old, unique photo. It was a group photo taken in 1927 of the first fire engine along with the first 13 volunteer firefighters in Odessa. Taylor, who has been researching the history of Odessa Fire and Rescue since the 80s, was stunned when he came across the photo on the website Traces of Texas. "I was excited," Taylor said. "That's the first clear image." Now, Taylor hopes to identify all 13 men in that photo. He has 5 of them identified so far, but is hoping the public can help out with the remaining 8. He has the names, but he needs to know which name goes to which face. "I'm trying to get all the guys identified," Taylor said. "That's my goal. I noticed some people on there like Clarence H. Stevens." The 1927 newspaper article just says C.H. Stevens. "He retired from my department in 1958, so his name was Clarence Hubert Stevens. I need someone in his family that can identify him. Same thing with P.J. Huber and all the other ones." The ones Taylor has identified are John McCown, Sam McCown, Robert Morgan Neal, George Shows, and James H. Price. Taylor runs the Odessa Fire Department's history website, which can be found at ofdhistory.org, and also has its own Facebook page. Taylor said he first saw the photo in a message on Facebook from a family member of a former Odessa firefighter. "One of our retired firefighters who is deceased, his son saw that photo on Facebook on Traces of Texas, and he shared it," Taylor said. "I have a fire department history website, and he shared that photo on the fire department history Facebook page. I thought, wow, I've been with the fire department all these years and done all this research, but had never seen this photo." Taylor then got a hold of Traces of Texas asking where they got the photo from. Turns out a person all the way up in Wisconsin was selling it on eBay for $39. Taylor got in touch with a photo seller in Wisconsin to try and find out more about the photograph and if there were more Odessa Fire and Rescue photos that he owned. "I asked him if he had any more photos, but he didn't," Taylor said. "He picked it up at an estate sale, There was a bunch of old vintage fire department photos, and that was the only one from the Odessa Fire Department. So apparently someone died that collected these photos, and they had one from Odessa. I had never seen it before. Taylor has since donated the photo to the University of Texas Permian Basin Archives so it can be preserved. They scanned it for me at 1800 DPI, where I can blow it up really big, Taylor said. Back in 1927, Odessa Fire and Rescue, which was just simply called Odessa Fire Department at the time, didn't have a fire station yet. Robert Morgan Neal, who is in the driver's seat, he was a city councilman, but he also had a garage on the south side, Taylor said. It was around First and Pearl, or something like that. George Shows was one of his mechanics, and Giant James H. Price was one of his mechanics, and they kept the fire truck at the garage where Shows worked as a mechanic. So George drove the fire truck, and the rest is history. The first fire station in Odessa wouldn't come around until 1939 on 3rd and Lee, which in addition also hosted City Hall, the police station, and a jail. Even though all 13 members of the 1st Odessa Fire Department have since died, Taylor is hopeful that a few members of their families might possess more photos from the beginning years of the Odessa Fire Department, as well as help identify the 8 remaining members of the photo. I know they're out there, Taylor said. I just have to find who in their families have it stuck in a shoebox in a closet somewhere. Dramatic Testimony in Racing Death's Trial by Kim Smith. After nearly 6 hours in the car, Sergio de la Garza was less than 5 minutes from home when he woke up to his mother's scream. I remember seeing 2 headlights heading toward our car, de la Garza testified Tuesday. She was putting her arm over me to protect me, and that's pretty much all I remember before the crash. When he woke up, de la Garza said he saw his mom slumped over the steering wheel to his left, and he remembers looking for the family dog, Paris. He recalls getting out of the car, falling and walking up to frantic people trying to keep him awake. From his position on the ground, the then 15-year-old could see a portion of his sister's body, but he didn't see first responders working frantically, trying to save his little brother's life. De la Garza took the stand Tuesday afternoon in the 161st Ector County District Court to talk about the loss of his mother, Araceli Galbadon, 47, and his siblings Cassandra de la Garza, 20, and Elias de la Garza, 9. On Monday, the man prosecutors say is responsible for their deaths, Albertico Valenzuela, pleaded guilty to 4 counts of racing on a highway, and now jurors must decide if the 21-year-old should be placed on probation or if he should receive a prison sentence of between 2 and 20 years. In the days after the October 1, 2018 crash, authorities said Valenzuela and El Paso resident Christian Flores, 22, were racing Dodge Challengers side by side down West 16th Street when Flores struck Valenzuela's car near Farm to Market 1936, lost control, and then hit the Chevrolet Impala being driven by Galbadon. On Tuesday, jurors watched multiple body cam, dash cam, and surveillance store videos from that night. The store videos caught the vehicles racing by, crashing, and Flores' car erupting into flames. The body cam and dash cam videos caught paramedics performing CPR on Flores. The devastation wrought on the Flores and Galbadon vehicles and multiple interviews with Valenzuela. Again and again, Valenzuela calmly told authorities he was not racing that night, and he was traveling 55 to 60 miles an hour when the other driver lost control of his vehicle after hitting a dip in the road and hit him. Texas Department of Public Safety accident reconstructionist Sergeant John Schock told jurors that technology revealed a dramatically different story. Schock testified that the data recorders in both Challengers showed the young men were traveling at 111 miles an hour when they crossed Farm to Market 1936 and hit the dip in the road. Flores' car went airborne, causing it to accelerate to 125 miles per hour before landing. The data recorders show the cars were traveling at 108 to 109 miles an hour when Valenzuela's car veered into Flores' car, causing it to skid sideways into the oncoming lane of traffic, Schock said. Less than 2 seconds later, Flores' car careened into Galbadon, who was driving 10 miles below the speed limit. She had no time to react, Schock said. Her car was sent backwards, spinning 180 degrees and hitting a pickup parked in a game room lot before stopping. Odessa firefighter paramedic Josh Heron described the Galbadon vehicle as being wadded up and said it was probably one of the worst crashes he's ever seen. Dr. Tasha Greenberg, deputy chief medical examiner for Tarrant County, testified Flores, Galbadon, and Cassandra De La Garza died that night as a result of extensive internal blunt force injuries. Elias De La Garza died 2 days later as a result of extensive internal injuries to his head. Sergio De La Garza, now a 20-year-old Odessa college student who lives with his grandparents, said he suffered a broken clavicle and extensive injuries to his intestines that kept him in the hospital for a month. On that night, the family was coming back from a cousin's wedding in Chihuahua, Mexico. His family was laid to rest there, and he often visits them, De La Garza said. He told jurors he is trying to move past the crash because he knows dwelling on it won't bring his family back. Still, he misses them a great deal and often gets sad. First Assistant Ector County District Attorney Greg Barber asked De La Garza if he forgives Valenzuela. Part of me has, but I know what happened after, and that makes me not want to, De La Garza said. Prior to De La Garza taking the stand, jurors learned Valenzuela was arrested in July 2020 after being accused of crashing into a fence while drunk. They learned Valenzuela continued to drive after the crash, despite the fact that one wheel was down to its rim. The jurors watched body and dash cam videos of law enforcement officers speaking with Valenzuela after the incident. The officers testified a barefoot Valenzuela reeked of alcohol, and on the videos he was slurring his words and appeared confused about his birthday. When asked for his driver's license, he got confused as to where his truck was, and then after checking inside it, he realized he didn't have his license with him. Valenzuela, who was wearing an ankle monitor because he was awaiting trial in the fatal crash, became belligerent while officers were putting him inside a patrol car and was seen repeatedly biting his seatbelt while waiting to be taken to jail. DPS Trooper John Newman testified that on the way to the jail, Valenzuela was often nonsensical. At one point, he said he was in high school but playing college football. He refused to participate in field sobriety tests or to take a breath test, Newman said. Barber and Assistant District Attorney Carmen Villalobos rested their case Tuesday afternoon. Philip Wildman represents Valenzuela, and Judge Justin Lowe is presiding over the trial. Quick hits. Fix West Texas Clinics. Fix West Texas, 5023 Princeton Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a variety of events throughout September. Through Monday and September 26th, 10 a.m. to noon, walk-in vaccinations. Today, 5:30 p.m., Bark in the Park with Midland Rockhounds at Momentum Bank Ballpark, 5514 Champions Drive, Midland. FWT will also hold Pay What You Can Microchip Clinic. Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., FWT Drive-Thru Vaccine Clinic at Reyes Mashburn Park, 2101 Cuthbert Avenue, Midland. Sunday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., FWT Drive-Thru Vaccine Clinic at Sherwood Park, 4819 North Everglade Avenue. To make an appointment, donate, or for pricing or more information, visit fixwesttexas.org. Story time. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled story time from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesdays through October 26th in the Children's Department. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit actor.lib.tx.us. Lunch and Learn. CASA, 1611 West Texas Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a volunteer lunch and learn from noon to 1 p.m. today. Lunch will be provided. Free STI testing and treatment. Texas Tech Physicians Family Medicine Clinic, 702 West 5th Street, is offering free STI testing and treatment from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesdays. Appointments are not required. For more information, call 432-703-5066. Women's Bible Study. St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church, 7601 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled Women's Bible Study. The Turning Point, a study of the Gospel of John by Dr. Alan Hunt, at 6:15 p.m., Wednesdays through November 9th in the church parlor. Cost of material is $20. Sign-up sheets are located in the narthex. For more information, email Sandra Off at opparterinc.com. Avery 5K Run. The Avery Foundation has scheduled the Avery 5K Run at 6:30 p.m. today at Mission Fitness, 8050 East Highway 191. The foundation was founded in the memory of Avery Quinones, who lost her battle to cancer at the age of 5, just a year ago. In honor of her life and fight against cancer, her parents Avi and Erica Quinones began this nonprofit foundation so they could help children from Odessa who are fighting the battle against cancer. Entry fee is $15 per person. Hot dogs and burgers will be available for purchase. Visit the AveryFoundation.org. Downtown Art Tour set for October 28th. Downtown Odessa, Inc. announced via press release on Tuesday the partnering with Odessa Arts to bring the second Downtown Art Tour. The event will take place October 28th as Downtown Odessa, Inc. and Odessa Arts will celebrate the history and culture of Dios de los Muertos on a guided walking tour stopping at 5 local businesses downtown. The public can decorate sugar skulls, sample salsa recipes, watch mariachi perform, and many other unique activities. The art tour will make 5 stops at locations including the Ector Theater, Copper Key Gift and Realty, Sidebar and Grill, Torchy's Tacos, and the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Tours will start at 6 p.m. and are limited to 100 tickets. The public is reminded to get tickets and order T-shirts by visiting the website at www.downtownodessatx.com. Participants must be 21 or older with valid ID to participate in the event, and non-alcoholic beverages are available at all beverage stops. More information can be found at downtownodessatx.com. Deputy Registrars Sworn In. 35 University of Texas Permian Basin Honor students were sworn in Tuesday as Deputy Voter Registrars. By completing Deputy Voter Registrar training, the students will be entrusted with officially registering voters. They were sworn in by Amanda Snyder, bilingual coordinator at the Ector County Elections Office. Snyder said she would be at Permian High School Friday to register people to vote. Freshman Trinity Anderson, 18, said this will hopefully help more young people get into politics, start voting, and making decisions for the nation. I can see that not many people vote that are our age, and I think it's America making America decline in a way. We have important decisions that we need to make, and we're the next one stepping up, Anderson said. She added that she thinks everyone's nervous to see how the election will play out. but they're excited to try and help everyone come together as one and vote. I feel like if we get more young people to vote, there wouldn't be as many problems like saying elections are rigged because they're just having voters from one demographic instead of everybody, Anderson said. She added that she's kind of nervous about asking people to register, but she'll be fine. I'll just go up straightforward and say it. I think everyone needs to vote because this is our America and it's our decision, Anderson said. Isabel Franco, a 24-year-old freshman, said she is absolutely enthused about this opportunity. I believe that this is going to be a very, very good chance to help involve the working class in the election more because I feel like their opinion matters the most because they make up the biggest segment of the population, and yet because they have less accessibility to the elections and stuff, they tend to have their voices unheard. So I'm hoping this opportunity will help me bring some outreach to them and help get them in local politics as well, Franco said. Carly Buck, an 18-year-old freshman, agreed with Anderson. We want to be able to make a difference and be able to say, oh yeah, I started at a younger age and I was involved in wanting to be a part of something bigger because not very many people do it right now. It needs to be a change, and I think that's what mainly pushed me because I wanted to see a change, Buck said. Snyder said the deputy registrars are a big help because they can register people at their schools or their church. They can really help us with our numbers and get more people involved. And with them being young and they see young people doing it, I just feel like it makes more of an impact, Snyder said. She added that younger people might not listen to her because she's older. They're a great help, Snyder said. UTPB Associate Professor of Art and Bob Perry, Associate Professor of Political Science, are the honor students' instructors. The project started because of a conversation with Representative Brooks Landgraf about how to engage the students in their community, but also in the electoral process, Stanley said. Then it had an intersection with a change in the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, where we now have to do these teamwork projects or group work projects. We could do them in the context of just the school, or we could actually get the kids out into the community in these teams, which will be forming to do this good work. Snyder said she has been working with Stanley for 6 years. Stanley said this gives students a better understanding of the way the system works. Man says girlfriend stabbed him with brandy bottle. A 33-year-old Odessa woman was arrested early Tuesday morning, 10 days after a local man accused her of stabbing him with a broken brandy bottle. According to OPD report, officers received a 911 call about a stabbing in the 4600 block of Oakwood Drive around 1:30 a.m. September 3rd. When officers arrived, a 32-year-old man told them his girlfriend of 1 week, Jamelia Whitsett, broke something and then stabbed his left arm and hand when he confronted her while she was attacking his vehicle. The man said he was convinced Whitsett intended to kill him, but he got away. Officers found a broken brandy bottle where the stabbing occurred, and both the neck and the opening of the bottle were covered in blood. The man found Whitsett's wallet inside his vehicle and said the woman shown on the driver's license was his attacker. Whitsett was booked into the Ector County Jail around 1 a.m. Tuesday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a Class 2 felony punishable by a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years in prison. She remained in jail Tuesday evening on a $50,000 surety bond. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Wednesday. Gary Allen Gaines, 73, of Lubbock, passed away on Monday, August 22nd, at Wilshire-on-Forth Memory Care. Gary was born May 4, 1949, to Durwood Gaines and Dorothy Craig Gaines in Midland. He is survived by his beloved wife, Sharon Hicks Gaines, his son Bradley, his daughter Nicole and husband Glenn Strader, daughter-in-law Debbie Gaines, and 5 grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents in 2011. Donations to Gary Gaines Alzheimer's Foundation may be sent to 4901 South Loop 289, P.O. Box 64366, Lubbock, Texas 79424. A celebration of life honoring Gary will be held on Saturday, September 17th at 2 p.m. at the Crossroads Fellowship Church in Odessa. Garrett Wade Casey, 22, of Odessa, passed away on September 2nd in a local hospital. Funeral service will be held at 4:30 p.m. on Friday, September 16th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Services will be directly followed by a celebration of life at the Ranchland Hills Golf Club in Midland. Garrett was born in Killeen, Texas on August 15th, 2000, to Paul and Michelle Casey. In addition to Paul, Michelle, Harper, and Leslie, Garrett is survived by four siblings and their spouses, sister Taylor Wood and spouse Caleb, brother Kevin Casey and spouse Lex, brother Tanner Casey and spouse Kayla, and sister Mackenzie Casey. Garrett is also survived by many grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, and abundance of friends. All expressions of sympathy, donations, and cards are welcome. The family requests that those who wish to make donations consider doing so to Venmo at Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L, hyphen Casey, C-A-S-C-Y, on PayPal. Casperell, C-A-S-P-R-E-L-L, at AOL.com to support Garrett's pride and joy, Harper Renee, in her upbringing. Online condolences may be made to www.npwelch.com. James Edwin Eddie Holman, age 66, of Odessa, passed away September 10th. He is preceded in death by his father, James Edwin Holman, Sr., mother Joanne Kilgore Holman, and his sister Allison Holman Johnson. He is survived by a son, Tommy T.J. Holman, and wife Kayla Holman, a grandson, brother Robert Holman and wife Kay Holman, a niece and a nephew. A viewing will be held in his remembrance at Acres West Funeral Chapel on Friday, September 16th from 5 to 9 p.m. Services are entrusted to Acres West and condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Jose Edmundo Armendariz, Sr., 86, of Odessa, died Saturday, September 10th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 12 noon Wednesday, September 14th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Rosary recited at 7 p.m. at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Cesario Fuentes Enriquez, 91, of Odessa, died Saturday, September 3rd in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 7 p.m. Thursday, September 15th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Graveside services will be Friday morning at 11 a.m. at Odessa 2 Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Pastor Samuel Lopez is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Calatano Galindo, 68, of Odessa, died Friday, September 9th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 15th at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Deacon Billy Garcia is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.